Hello, Exopolitics listeners. I'm R.V. Romero, Stellar Artistic Director of Exopolitics Radio. I'd like to thank you all for listening to our show and for taking an interest in the evolution of our planet and our species through Exopolitics Radio and the study of law and order in the universe. For over a year now, I've enjoyed working closely with your elusive host, Alfred Weber, on this fine production that we're proud to broadcast on a weekly basis and post free of charge on our website. Currently, I'm happy to say that in the last 90 days, ExopoliticsRadio.com has been visited by people in over 56 countries and 492 cities around the globe, including all 50 states in the U.S. During that time, we've averaged over 5,000 podcast downloads per show, and we're adding listeners every week with affiliates at Paranormal Radio, the Revere Radio Network, and most recently, Kansas City Online Radio. Now, I'm telling you all this to give you an update on how our show is progressing, and also to let you know that indeed, the number of intelligent people here on Earth who are catching on to the fact that there are other intelligent life forms in the universe is growing. And Exopolitics Radio is proud to be on the cutting edge of this revelation by reporting news and providing the insight and perspectives that you can't find anywhere else on the radio, in the newspapers, or on the television. We want to continue bringing you Exopolitics Radio both online and on air free of charge, as we always have, because we believe in the message and the content. However, as a studio and production team, we do have routine expenses which must be maintained in order to do so. It pains us to ask, and I promise we won't do it often, but if every listener online donated $1 a month, that would completely cover our production costs for the show and the immense amount of time spent doing research, interviews, and production time given graciously by our host. Of course, not every listener is going to be able to donate $1 or donate on a monthly basis, so if you could consider donating a little bit more, that would be a tremendous help and allow us to continue adding more and more affiliates, creating new programs, interviews, and materials, and most importantly, continue broadcasting this message of hope and truth around the globe and the universe. So whatever the outcome, I can promise you that we will continue working to bring you a unique and sincere program week in and week out, 12 months a year. So we thank you for your support of Exopolitics Radio. Please remember to go to www.exopoliticsradio.com and click on the donate menu option for more information. Thank you very much, and now back to the show.
The views expressed on Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber are the views of Alfred Weber and not specifically those of our on-air affiliates or our sponsors.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio, KPHX Phoenix, 1480 AM, Nova M Radio Network, 1480kphx.com on the internet, our audio archives, which we invite you to visit free, are at www.exopoliticsradio.com. You can also download there, folks, at a very, very special price, which will support Exopolitics Radio, a copy of the book, Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe, that gave birth to the field of exopolitics when it was published in the year 2000. It's like the 100 Monkeys Syndrome. It opened up a new pathway of interface between terrestrials, our human society, and advanced extraterrestrials in the universe. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Today we have a continuation of our special focus here at Exopolitics Radio on extraterrestrials and political communication, or should I say exopolitical communication, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, in our continuing interview with author Robert M. Stanley, who is currently the editor of Unicus Magazine and author of the book Close Encounters on Capitol Hill. And since bringing to light that Washington, D.C. is the extraterrestrial encounter capital of the world, and by the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication, this is where advanced ethical extraterrestrial civilizations have been focusing their public encounters since 1946, 1947, communicating to us in a very explicit way, highly dimensional, highly packed, highly symbolic. And so what we're going to do is depart from our usual format to have an extended interview, continuing interview with Robert M. Stanley, because we're breaking through the embargo and we're bringing these hitherto for hidden facts to public light. We're breaking through the two black helicopters that came down on Mr. Stanley's home in Los Angeles, one after we first contacted him. They came right over his home and, quote, shook the homes to the foundation. So we're breaking through all that dark stuff. It's poof, it's gone, is no more, because the Galactic Fleet has arrived over Washington, D.C. Please stay tuned for our exclusive, unique, and glass-ceiling-shattering interview with Robert M. Stanley, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Thank you.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Today we have our special guest again in part two of an ongoing interview on exopolitics, extraterrestrials and political communications, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill. And we have the author of the book, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, Mr. Robert M. Stanley, formerly a corporate journalist for Honda Research and Development in Torrance, California, and now editor of unicusmagazine.com. Welcome, Robert.
Thank you for having me, Alfred. I want to commend you for being the first person to actually read my book prior to interviewing me.
Oh, well, your book is actually, I think, a unique resource because, as we've learned, Washington, D.C. is what we can call the extraterrestrial encounter or close encounter capital of the world. And by the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communications, all of these UFO encounters are like multi-dimensional messages. And so your book, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, is a virtual resource for the communications that apparently upper dimensional ethical extraterrestrials have been sending us for quite some time now. Where can people obtain copies of this book?
Well, at this point in time, they can only purchase it through my website at unicusmagazine.com, which is spelled U-N-I-C-U-S magazine.com. But what might be helpful, what I'm thinking, to take this to the next step, I really need a larger publisher to get involved. I'm also looking for a producer to do some sort of TV documentary. And I'm also looking for a promoter. So I need a publisher, a producer, a promoter to get involved in some of the aspects of taking this message to the world. Because, I mean, even though this is America and Washington, D.C. is the capital of the United States, it's a seat of power for the world. And the impact that the extraterrestrials have on the future is going to be for everybody, not just Americans.
Well, you know, here we have what is extraordinary. And the reason why we're covering this in depth for Exopolitics Radio is because of our focus on relations between our civilization and advanced intelligent civilizations in the universe, some of which are apparently visiting us now, and those that are visiting us seem to be concentrating in high measure with highly charged sightings and very precisely timed sightings in Washington, D.C., which is the focal point of the U.S. government, which I think was, quote, founded as a force for good, but now as some would say, has been taken over as a force for the permanent war economy. And, you know, there's a tremendous amount of tension, as we know, going on now. I'm looking again, for those who may not have listened to last week's broadcast, to page 409 of your book, in which the recorded UFO sightings over Washington start in 1850. 1897 go through the 1930s. In the 1940s, they really begin to pick up. The 1950s, 54, 53, 54, 55, as that nuclear era starts to pick up, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, all the Eisenhower years, 60, 61, 62, 63, the Kennedy years, 64, 65, the Johnson years, 67, 68, the famous Johnson years, 69, the Nixon years, 73, the Watergate years, 74. Then we jump, curiously, from 74 to 88 with a big gap, 88 to 92, then the 90s, and then very powerfully after the year 2000, especially after September 11th, 2001, with the attempted coup d'etat and an attempt to cancel parliamentary democracy in the U.S., constitutional democracy. Sightings 2001, 2002, 2003. These are multiple sightings, 2004, 5, 6, and up through 2007. I'd sort of like to, from a context communication point of view, because this is such a treasure trove of sightings, your book, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, it's a 400-page book that is just literally filled with reports of all of these reports of sightings in the densest sightings area. If we could concentrate on a specific number of sightings. First of all, let's go to the paired sightings because they seem to be particularly significant from a context communication point of view. And that is the July 26, 1952, classic sightings, and the July 26, 2002, separated by 50 years. I wondered if you could describe for our listeners again, fully, you know, you're talking to people who are hearing this for the first time, and give them a full picture of what occurred on July 26, 1952, and a full picture of what occurred on July 26, 2002.
The first obvious difference between the two events, Mr. Weber, is that in July of 1952, President Truman issued an order to shoot on sight. Because the UFOs were showing up so frequently, that was 22 times that year that they showed up, and it made the military very nervous. So in July, and I believe, according to recent information I received, that in September of 1952, they were also firing on the UFOs, and at that time, the UFOs were firing back and shot down some of our jets. So July was a very tense month. One person told me that they actually had anti-aircraft guns in D.C. on the back of pickup trucks that were or large, you know, military vehicles that were. They were prepared for an invasion, essentially, is what was going on there. Now let's fast forward 50 years. 2002, they were seen 10 days earlier. Actually, they were photographed landing on Capitol Hill on the 16th of July. 10 days later, they were sighted on radar again, and NORAD got nervous, and so they scrambled military jets. And I don't think they were firing on them at that time. There's no reports of that, but they were trying to chase them out of the area, which apparently they did successfully. However, as I sent you that update, you know, there's 224 cases of UFO sightings within a 156-year period in my book. After the book was published in September of last year, 2006, I continued the investigation because I felt there was more out there. My database currently stands at over 240 UFO or ET events in Washington, D.C. within the past 157 years. I have a feeling that there are people out there with more photographs and eyewitness accounts, and the number could easily grow to be 300 within the last 150-something years with a little help from the audience out there. I think that there are people, and the reason I say that is because a lot of people that live and work in Washington, D.C. have positions of power, and they don't wish to come forward and be exposed because they don't want the ridicule. And I understand that fully, and I'm willing to respect their anonymity. But this information is really important to the world. And it's and I really appreciate it if anybody shares with me, like in the update. The reason is I even found out about this one gentleman who's having contact. He's not only seeing these things, and he's, you know, he's up there in years. He's 60, 70 years old, very professional individual. And he has a business in Washington, D.C. He doesn't want to come forward, but I know who the gentleman is because his daughter bought a book from me here in Los Angeles, took it to her mother. Then I find out, she contacts me again, tells me that her father is having close encounters right there where they live in Rock, I think it's Rock Creek Park. And apparently he was having some telepathic communication with these UFOs as they were hovering outside numerous times. And that was in 2006, and I believe it's ongoing. So this is a huge story. This is a really very important story that the audience can actually help with the investigation, because apparently nobody else in the media wants to do this.
And this is so important. I mean, to me, to go July 26, 1952, mm-hmm. to July 26, 2002, first of all, the dates are amazing because that's the anniversary of the Cuban Revolution, July 26, 1952.
Right, you'd mentioned that before.
Right, to July 26, 2002, I call it the human evolution. Mm. Not the Cuban Revolution, but the human evolution, which is what we're trying to sort of break out of the box of the permanent war economy into the human evolution, mm-hmm. you know, into evolving into a larger. I happen to have lived through the Cuban Revolution, and I was in Cuba at the original 26th of July when they broke into the Moncada army barracks, and then when Fidel, you know, finally and Cuban people overcame their, you know, enslavement under a CIA mafia state, which they had to live under. Mm-hmm. They were basically enslaved by U.S. capital, by the CIA, and by the mafia.
That explains why you're so adamant about that date being an important turning point for humanity.
Well, I think so. I mean, that, you know, and the Cuban Missile Crisis had to do with nuclear war, which relates to what the meetings were all about between President Dwight Eisenhower on the night of February 20th, 1954, with the upper-dimensional Nordic extraterrestrial ambassadors who asked him to abolish U.S. nuclear weapons. There's a story going on here. And so the title of this segment is really Extraterrestrials and Political Communications, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill. We know from the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communications that UFO encounters are like dreams. They're actually condensed symbolic communications, such that when you have, as you were pointing out, that I believe it was July 4th, 2002, when you have the big fireworks exhibit on the mall, there's an extraterrestrial craft there.
There was numerous, and in fact, I also found accounts of people seeing them on New Year's Eve when fireworks would be going off all over the mall, New Year's Eve, January 2000. So they've been seen pretty much every time. You know, the other thing about the gaps in the database that I've created, compiled, I think that because of the advent of talk radio and the Internet, more people are giving up this information that they've been sitting on for a period of years. I think there was probably quite a few sightings and close encounters that occurred back in, you know, before the 40s and 30s and stuff, but nobody reported it, or if they did, it was sort of lost in some dusty archive somewhere.
Right, right. So these are just reported UFO sightings.
And, you know, here's the other thing. I've got to tell you, Mr. Weber, until I started this investigation, there was only one photograph, which you call the archetypal photograph, of a fleet of UFOs as they passed behind the Capitol Dome. Well, if you look at the movie that I was able to find, which was leaked by a British film company in 2005, that's still classified movie footage. I don't know where they got the copy, but it's never been declassified. And we only had this one picture. Somehow, when I started the investigation, not only did I, when I hooked up with the D.C. photographer, Mr. Allen, and he provided all his material from July 4th, July 16th, and also November 20th, I started to find all these other photographs that have been scattered to the wind. And what's more important is I know for a fact that the military has hundreds of photographs and more movies that they're still sitting on that they don't want us to see because all of their crazy explanations about lens flares and temperature inversions and Venus and all that stuff just doesn't wash when you look at the photographic evidence, which is considered forensic evidence in a court of law if this ever made it that far.
Right. So now, why is it, do you think, that if you get into the mind of the extraterrestrial intelligence, which is behind these sightings that we see so many, behind, say, the Capitol with the Statue of Freedom, we see on the Mall on July 4th, do we have any sightings directly over the White House? You know, there's that classic, well, why don't they come and land on the White House lawn? Well, they're actually doing everything but landing on the White House lawn. They're landing right on top of the Capitol, right adjacent to the Capitol Dome.
Right, which is just down the street. Geographically,
yeah.
It's literally just down the street from the Ellipse or the Washington Monument and the White House. They're all connected along the Mall right there. But, the update that I sent you that I have posted on my website,
right.
those are things I cannot verify. However,
right.
that comes from an author named John Lath, who published a book in 1980 called Genesis for the New Space Age. And he claims that the researchers that gathered that information about a UFO landing in D.C. and a human getting out, dematerializing, then rematerializing at the White House and entering in ways that absolutely freaked out the Secret Service, and then had an unscheduled meeting with President Ford, all of that would be hard to substantiate. However, the author claims that his sources are so well placed within the government and the military in D.C. that he cannot disclose them, that the only reason they gave up the information to him was and his associates was because that they granted them anonymity.
I understand. So there's that version, but we'll put that version on hold.
Okay.
for purposes of this program, because we're really going to go with the hard data and the hard sightings that are undeniable. And the classic question that we get from skeptics is, well, why don't they just land on the White House lawn?
Okay.
And so after reviewing your book, the answer is, well, they're doing just about everything else. They're actually landing on the Capitol roof right next to the dome. And I think
was the House side.
Yeah, it was the House side. I think it was July 14th, 2002, was it?
July 16th.
Yeah, July 16th. Could you repeat again the circumstances of that sighting?
Sure. It was the D.C. photographer who is someone who had worked for ABC News for 14 years previously. 8 of those years he worked at the White House and had a very high clearance for working at the White House and on Air Force One for ABC News. In any case, in 2002, he was doing a freelance job and for a local recording artist there in D.C. He was actually shooting an album cover for this individual. And they decided to go to the Capitol building at 12:30 at night. They parked. They walked out. They set it up, trying to make it dramatic. And this guy's posing he's sitting on the edge of the reflecting pool taking these pictures. And in the background are all these bizarre lights. And one of them is actually landed on the Capitol building roof, House side of the dome. But, you know, here's the thing why they don't land on the White House is because they're not welcome. We have officially not welcomed them to come and interact with us, so they're doing this covertly. And I know you're working on the amnesty program, but I would like to offer one other possible solution,
okay,
which is this event that I loosely call the cosmicconcert.com.
Okay.
I have a website for that. And what I'm suggesting is that we put on an event on the ground that would draw media attention and the public's attention to doing one thing, which is voting globally, democratically, which
right.
has never been done before, on one single question, one issue, which is, should we, the people of this planet Earth, invite intelligent extraterrestrial beings that are benevolent, peaceful, loving, kind individuals to interact with us openly? This would be a huge step forward, and until recently I wasn't sure where this should occur, but now I'm convinced it has to happen on the National Mall sometime in the future, and that's, again, why I really would like to hook up with a promoter who has experience in this field. But I've put the idea out there. I've planted the seed, and I do believe, based on the responses I've been getting, that people are willing to do this. And even if you don't physically go there, you can participate through the Internet. And really, all it takes is just a thought. In fact, that's the subtitle for the event. It's called The Thought Heard Round the World.
You've been listening to our interview with Robert M. Stanley, author of Close Encounters on Capitol Hill. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. We'll now continue on our interview on extraterrestrial civilizations and political communication, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, with author Robert M. Stanley. Thank you.
So this concept would be, of course, you would have to get a stand down from NORAD.
I suppose that's
you know, maybe schedule it on September 11th. You would get the automatic NORAD stand down.
Yeah,
I'm being ironic, but no, just to be clear that when we put forth the Truth Amnesty disclosure proposal, which is actually drawing quite a bit of attention at many levels, including dimensional levels, I think. We also put forth a parallel proposal, which I think is very supportive and in the same vein of the cosmic concert. And that is we ask that people just begin to affirm, and they can affirm this in an inner way,
right,
that we the people have the right to communicate directly with extraterrestrials on all matters affecting the destiny of our planet and our people, and that we don't need government intermediaries, and because in effect we're being held hostage. And it's very important, I think, and this is the same impulse, I think, that is behind the Cosmic Concert, which I think is very excellent, because you're positioning it in Washington, D.C., which is the UFO capital of the world, on that kind of grid ley line there. The impulse of this, of people even saying it silently, mm-hmm, is that because of the non-locality of consciousness, if they direct that to upper dimensional, if they direct their thoughts telepathically to upper dimensional extraterrestrial civilizations, even to the Galactic Federation and other bodies, that will begin to shift. That could begin a shift because of the non-interference rules.
I was told about this, and in fact, because I was a little worried about somebody messing with the internet, because I've had my website hacked before, so I know this is possible. I wanted to keep a running tally of the votes on an internet site that anybody could tap into, but I know that could be jury-rigged easily. Somebody could hack in there. However, as you said, the higher entities in these higher dimensions would certainly be reading our thought waves as the concert or the process unfolded. You know, the other thing is, if they show up and try to assist us and they're not welcome here, most people would see that as an intervention. They would see it, or the military would see it as an invasion. Whereas if we were to invite the good guys, or even, actually at this point, I know the bad guys are here covertly too. I'd like them to come out of the closet. I think everybody should come out of the cosmic closet and state their agenda on the table, as opposed to playing little crazy little covert games.
Right, right. See, that's the whole point of the truth and reconciliation process.
Yes.
I.e. that secrecy is what has given power to this whole process of the permanent war economy, whether you count it going back 200,000 years or however many 100,000 years it was that we've been in this kind of civil war posture,
right,
galactic civil war posture, or if you bring it up over the last 60 years alone, where the Rockefeller, City of London, Rothschild, permanent war economy interests have tried to privatize relationships with extraterrestrial civilizations and have done so secretly. All of that's coming out now. So let's have a truth and reconciliation process. Let's let it all hang out. Let's just see how it's known. Our understanding is that now even the small grays who originated their contracts for abductions in the late 40s, early 50s, and some of the reptilians have actually pulled back, and they're against nuclear war, and they're not in favor of this current faction of the permanent war economy.
Well, it's kind of silly. I mean, if I understood Mr. Sparks correctly about us being sort of like a farm for them, it would make sense that they'd want to stop the ecological destruction on the planet and the genocide of our own species. It would make sense that that's bad for their business as well as our own.
Right.
So there's got to be some intervention, but like I said, until we actually collectively, or at least a simple majority of us, say, yes, we want to have an open diplomatic dialogue and discourse with you guys. If that doesn't happen, then everything that they do could be considered to be an invasion or an intervention, an unwelcome intervention on their part.
Well, now, we have about 10 minutes remaining in our segment here, and I wondered if you could just run through some of the highlight encounters, extraterrestrial craft encounters, that you think are important, that you think we should know about.
Well, most of them are in my book, and I'm not sure exactly which page they're on, but
right.
I can just summarize it this way,
yeah.
That people have had, during the day and during the night, they've had close encounters with a variety of different size and shape and color craft right there in the heart of D.C., which is, by the way, it's prohibited airspace for the first few miles around the Washington Monument in a circle, and then that's surrounded by restricted airspace. And since 9/11, there have been thousands of cases on the radar of unidentified objects. That doesn't mean they're all UFOs or extraterrestrial vehicles, but neither are they all Cessnas either. So there's something really going on. And since 9/11, the White House and the Capitol building have been evacuated a couple times because they didn't know what was going on up there. And like I said, they can't control the UFO activity directly unless they want to start trying to intercept all the time, and that would cause people to be suspicious. And obviously they can't shoot at them because debris does fall down, and obviously there's consequences for shooting at these guys because they obviously can shoot back. I mean, that would include the good guys. They know how to defend themselves when necessary. I'm sure they don't like it. But the point being is that some people, and I mean some people, have absolutely had their life rearranged because of their close encounters on Capitol Hill. One lady in particular was just on a Saturday afternoon was driving down, I think it was Rhode Island Avenue, at like 10 o'clock in the morning. She was stuck in traffic. She looked up in the sky. She saw this weird bright, she thought it was a star. Well, suddenly the star started getting very large and close, and she realized it was actually a very bright, she said the metal was so bright it was like almost like a mirror. It was reflecting the color of the trees below it, because this thing came zooming down out of space and parked itself over the trees right there on Rhode Island Avenue, and obviously everybody in their car that looked up saw this thing hovering over the tree, and she said that her husband got very upset. He was just pissed off because of the traffic and wanted to go home, but he saw it too. And other people in cars right next to them also saw it. And she said, you know, she was a very credible person, a school teacher at one point in her life, and she said that she had never seen anything like it before or since, but it was clearly there during the day. Now, obviously, there's things that happened at night. Another person who contacted the photographer, Mr. Allen, this individual, we can't give him a name right now because he could probably lose his job at the school system, but anyway, he claims he was abducted off the street on a New Year's Eve in D.C., and that he was taken up in one of these, what he called it, just a ball of light, enveloped him, and took him up, and it absolutely freaked him out. He didn't tell anybody, and a few weeks later, he was doing a side job as a driver at night, and he ended up over at Mr. Allen's house for a client, and he came in, and Mr. Allen put these images on that he'd taken at the Capitol building, and suddenly this man started reliving his abduction experience, and of course, this absolutely freaked out Mr. Allen and the individual that the school teacher slash limo driver had, you know, his client really thought this guy had lost it because he was in a catatonic state. He kept mumbling something about pink bubble gum, can't move. And then when they switched off the TV, the man started to come out of it, but he was sobbing. And he was, you know, he slowly started to kind of piece these things together briefly for Mr. Allen, who's also had, you know, been abducted as a child, had his own close encounters. But I feel for these people. They have, even like I was telling you before, the Capitol Police have had close encounters. And they were not briefed. They were not prepared for anything like that. And apparently some of this has been logged. I have not been able to see this. I'm just taking the word of one of the Capitol Police officers that we shared information with. He was trying to give us information back, basically. Unfortunately, none of that could be leaked. In fact, I think that's why they moved him out of his position at the Capitol, is because he was trying to leak us information.
Right, right. So with regard to the media, you know, this is a case, again, of the media being a key part of the continued embargo and the continued brainwashing of the world population, of the U.S. population, the North American population, and the world population. Here you have a situation where upper-dimensional, ethical, extraterrestrial civilizations have been since at least, let's just say, 1946, 42, 43, 46. That's when these things start getting cataloged in earnest.
Right.
Have been signaling with political communications, exopolitical communications.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as I said, yeah. Mr. Allen worked for ABC News, so who do you think was the first media organization he contacted?
ABC.
Yeah, it was ABC News in D.C. And I actually saw one of those emails, and that person politely said, no way in heck are we going to air any of this. We don't cover these kind of things. Wow, that was quite a revelation. Well, same with the Washington Post. One individual that Mr. Allen approached at National Geographic was, you know, they've got some of the best photography in the world, right? So they were fascinated by the pictures, but boy, when you talk about opening the can of worms that comes with it, in other words, the eyewitness accounts, the individual who showed interest in it, he was dismissed. In other words, he was fired.
He was fired from National Geographic.
Yeah, because he was showing too much interest in this story, I believe. It's really politically, professionally, even personally, this subject matter can destroy a person's career and their well-being because of the ongoing psychological warfare, mainly, I believe, instituted by the CIA back in the mid-50s.
Exactly. So you still have the enforcement of this by the CIA, by the NSA, through their secret operatives in the media,
right,
where when you have a legitimate journalist who's a White House-accredited journalist come to ABC, they say, no, no way. They come to National Geographic. There's an editor there or there's a journalist there who sees the photographic quality and see that, yeah, this is perfect for a National Geographic news story. What better place?
Yeah.
What better place? Oh, you know, we visit ruins in Peru, and we visit extraterrestrial sightings in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a scientific issue.
Well, here's the thing. I've been in print. That's one thing, magazines and newspaper articles, and I've been on the radio, but I still have yet to break through the television barrier. There's been a couple small shows that have touched on it, but I really need the help of somebody that's in TV production, because the material is phenomenal. Your ratings will go through the roof wherever airs this. However, the consequence will be you're going to have to take some heat. It just comes with the territories. You're going to get ridiculed and possibly worse, but this is a story that needs to be told, and sooner or later I think some brave people, like I said, publishers and producers, even a promoter or two, should come along, step up to the plate, and actually help me tell this story, because, my God, I've been doing this pretty much by myself for the past 2.5 years, except for people like yourself, obviously. But, I mean, really, I've been carrying this ball up a hill, and I kind of feel, since talking to you this last couple of interviews and getting some of the feedback from your audience, I really feel like the snowball is starting to roll down the hill.
Yeah.
It's going to get larger and larger.
Well, let me share with you in this light why it may help you to slightly reframe what you just said in a slightly more optimistic way.
Okay.
Following the X conference, we had a National Press Club press conference, and that's where I gave the announced formally for the press the truth amnesty disclosure process based on the model of truth and reconciliation rather than, you know, retributive war crimes, justice type of thing. And a Washington Post reporter, Dana Milbank, was there and did a whole big article on it, complete with a video link to it. You can find it in the Washington Post. And so some people thought that it was in the typical ha-ha game that is looking down his nose and poking fun of our press conference and poking fun of the whole issue. But ExoPolitics Toronto, Victor Vigiani, has followed up with a letter that reframed it in terms of, okay, the Washington Post has now become part of the disclosure process because they've actually acknowledged the phenomenon publicly.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, they're now part of the process. So because we have framed it in a truth amnesty process. So I think that these photographs and these facts should surface further, should surface in Washington, D.C. in a truth amnesty context because the proof is so undeniable. And imagine how the CIA, the NSA, the ONI, the, you know, DIA, all of those alphabet soup agencies are trying to keep the lid on the galactic fleet that is now, for 50 years, has come in saying, hey, guys, we're here, we're here, we're here, we're here. I mean, it's an absurd situation for them.
It is. And, you know, Alfred, I must say, I do like the idea of essentially we're talking about forgiveness here.
Yeah.
I've got to tell you and your audience that in my personal life, if I hadn't learned how to forgive myself and others, I would have perished a long time ago, and I would have gone to my demise or to meet my maker with a huge chip on my shoulder. So it's easy to say, it's difficult to do, but the benefits are many and for everyone. So I applaud you for doing that, and I certainly hope that the process can continue.
You know, these are universal principles, and I should acknowledge that the parties that gave me the inspiration to come forward on this, these were the extraterrestrial beings, the small grays and reptilians who reportedly met with Jim Sparks and said amnesty is the only way. And it was after interviewing Jim Sparks, who, like yourself, was on ExoPolitics Radio, that I came to see this as a way to do it. And I said, look, let's all go forward with this proposal. So we're going forward with a proposal that has been put forth reportedly. You know, we don't have full proof, but it seems congruent by the very extraterrestrial civilization, specific species that has been in relationship with the U.S. government in secret human extraterrestrial liaison program since the late 40s or early 50s.
And I totally agree because I'd read Mr. Sparks' book prior to hearing your interview, but I got to say, you know, according to the testimony of Commander Robert O'Dean, formerly with NATO, he said that the NATO assessment clearly defined that there was little grays, reptilians, but there was also human extraterrestrials that were visiting us, and that was the group that disturbed them the most because these people could walk among us and live among us, and we wouldn't know. Well, I mean, from a military perspective, it's a little paranoid. That
exactly.
would really get you going. So
yeah,
that's why I addressed it in my book, and I know it's highly controversial, but look, Unicus is the magazine for earthbound extraterrestrials.
Great.
We're the first and only group to do that, so it would make sense that they would contact me, and I'm still in contact with at least one of them.
Okay.
And I do feel that he is a here for to help. That's been my understanding, and my relationship with him all along has been one of healing and helpfulness. And I think I would like to see everybody on the planet afforded that same opportunity.
Excellent. So people can access the magazine and can purchase your book, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, at?
It's www.unicusmagazine.com. It's spelled UNICUS magazine.com. And there's also a link there for the cosmicconcert.com if you're interested.
Excellent. We've come to the end of another very exciting segment. I know that we will have you on again to keep us posted in this very important area, because if the extraterrestrials are doing their political communication, their exopolitical communication over Washington, D.C., well, Exopolitics Radio has got to be there, right?
Yeah. Yes, it's a good fit.
Exactly. So we've been with our very special guest and commentator, Robert M. Stanley, who is the editor of Unicus Magazine and author of Close Encounters on Capitol Hill. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you.
Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber.
This is Exopolitics Radio. Welcome back. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Well, we've reached the end of another shattering. You know, we're just shattering these glass ceilings and moving into a totally new energy here. Exopolitics Radio program bringing to light the fact that Washington, D.C. is the extraterrestrial encounter capital of the world. I mean, think of all the energy that all these alphabet agencies, CIA, FBI, DIA, NSA, NRO, they all spend to keeping the lid on while the galactic fleet is just like, hey guys, we're here. You know, extraordinary power to bring humanity into its full destiny while these jokers just try to keep the permanent war economy going. It's an old tired game. It's lost. It's gone. We're moving on. So this is another, you're witnessing it here on Exopolitics Radio. The passing of the truth embargo and the coming of truth amnesty and the opening of the truth of we the people taking into our own hands, communicating directly with extraterrestrial civilizations and with ourselves in our sovereignty, because all sovereignty for government comes from the consent of the people. And that's where it comes from. And it comes from the galactic government and the galactic governance authorities, and guess who they want to communicate with? Certainly not with Uncle Sam in its present configuration, or with the world authorities in their present configuration. Well, we have good news in that we've just learned that the Republic of Ireland is making public, this is from researcher Paola Harris, a portion of its secret extraterrestrial UFO files from the 1970s and 1980s. So the truth marches on. This is Exopolitics Radio, which is produced by Phoenix Productions in conjunction with 1480 KPHX, Progressive Talk Phoenix, and the Nova M Network. Executive producer Richard Romero Sr., director R.V. Romero, producer and editor Chris Romero. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, wishing you a wonderful, miracle-filled, and extraterrestrial encounter-full day, week, and life. Thank you.